Thanks. You want to put a clip in? Yeah.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. If I fall asleep in the middle, please forgive me. It's not that I'm boring myself. It's just that I just came back from America right before Shabbos, so I had to do something on Shabbos, so I didn't really have a chance to recover. I was also seated in the middle between two very aggressive sleepers, so constantly. Okay, crashing into me. But anyway. I want to do two things. I want to indeed talk about the Aseres HaDibrot, but I also want to talk a little bit about Lag BaOmer, because we have the Chag of Lag BaOmer today. In terms of the Aseres HaDibrot, we did discuss the fact that, contrary to popular opinion, the Aseres HaDibrot were not given to Bnei Yisrael on the holiday of Shavuos. They were given to Bnei Yisrael the day after Shavuos, and we talked about that at great length, in deference to Moshe Rabbeinu's interpretation that they needed an extra day of preparation. Now, one other issue I want to discuss is a three-way machlokas Rishonim. How many of the Aseres HaDibros did Bnei Yisrael hear directly from God? We have, well, that's one opinion, yeah. We have the Ashita of the Kuzari. We have the Shita of Rashi. And we have the Shita of the Rambam in the Mori Nevuchim. The Kuzari's Pshat is actually the simplest in Pshuto Shel Mikra, and that is Bnei Yisrael heard all of the Ten Commandments from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At that point, they said they were too frightened, and they asked Moshe to get the rest of the Torah, but all ten were actually heard by Bnei Yisrael. This is the Kuzari Shita. Bnei Yisrael heard all of the Aseres HaDibros, and it is only after they heard the Aseres HaDibros did they then say to Moshe, "We're so frightened because of the revelation of the Shekhinah that you should be the intermediary." This is the Shita of the Kuzari. Rashi's Shita, which is probably the best known, is Bnei Yisrael only heard the first two Dibros of Anochi, I am the Lord your God, and you shall not have any other gods. At that point, they were afraid, and they asked Moshe to hear the rest and communicate the rest. That is Rashi's Shita. And Rashi has a very strong proof, really, from an explicit Gemara. There's a Gemara that explicitly says like Rashi. And this is a famous Gemara at the end of Maseches Makos. The Gemara says at the end of Maseches Makos that there are 613 mitzvos in the Torah. Right? We know 365 negative commandments. Thou shalt not do, and 248 positive commandments, thou shalt do. And as you know, and I'm sure you've heard over the years, the 248 corresponds to the number of limbs or bones in a person. So each mitzvah gives life to a bone, and the 365 either corresponds to the sinews or the ligaments, or it corresponds to the days of a solar year. So every day has a mitzvah, every ligament has a mitzvah. And the Gemara then says, what is the proof that we have 613? Because the Pasuk says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe gave us Torah, and the gematria of Torah, Tav is 400, and Vav is 6, and Resh is 200, and He is 5. The gematria of Torah is 611. So the Gemara asks, there's a disconnect here. How do you prove 613 from a pasuk that says 611? Answer, the Gemara says, Moshe gave us 611 because two commandments we heard directly from God, Anochi and Lo Yelecha. This is a kasha on the Kuzari, but at least according to the Gemara, which Rashi uses in his commentary on the Chumash, we heard from Hashem two commandments, and all of the rest we heard from Moshe. Right? Now again, this is a good example where the simple reading of the Chumash is that we heard all of the Aseres HaDibros from Hashem. That's the simple reading of the Chumash. The Kuzari fits the Pshuto Shel Mikra, but Rashi follows the teaching of Chazal. Now, there's a third opinion, which is the opinion of the Rambam in the Mori Nevuchim. the guide to the perplexed, which is an amazing opinion. The Rambam says, Bnei Yisrael heard no words at all. They saw and they experienced the revelation of the Shekhinah, and they heard a voice of God, but they did not hear any articulated words. They heard God speaking to Moshe, but they did not hear anything. And that's why the Rambam writes, the Torah uses the phrase, they heard a kol. The Rambam says, kol is different than dibor. Dibor, when you hear a dibor, you're hearing speech. When you hear a kol, you hear a voice, but you don't hear a speech. And he says that Bnei Yisrael did not hear any words from the Almighty. Bnei Yisrael only heard the speech, the voice of the Almighty. So the Rambam then asks on himself, how can I say that? Does not the Gemara say, Anochi and Lo Yelecha, we heard from Hashem? It was the Rambam himself asks the question from the Gemara. So the Rambam gives a very amazing, ingenious answer. He says, when the Gemara says, they heard, I am the Lord your God, and you shall never know the gods, it doesn't mean they heard those words, but it means by virtue of experiencing Matan Torah and the revelation of the Shekhinah, they intuitively understood there is only one God and there is no other God. So when the Gemara says they heard Anochi and Lo Yelecha, it does not mean they heard those words, but it means they understood that concept by virtue of the experience of Matan Torah itself. Okay, so we have three different views as to what Bnei Yisrael heard. Yeah.
When you say voice, they heard Hashem's voice.
Yeah.
And not words.
Yeah.
But what was the voice? Just a grumble?
It was like a, I mean, like you can hear a voice.
You can hear my voice, you hear my words.
You say? No, I understand, but... This is a little, well, again, since Hashem doesn't have vocal cords, you know, it's hard for us to understand this exactly, but they heard like a rumble. They heard noise. They heard just like there was thunder and lightning. They heard the roar of Hashem, but it was beyond their capacity to hear. Once again, because Hashem's voice is a spiritual entity, just like dogs could be attuned to frequencies that human beings are not attuned to, this was a frequency that we could not quite comprehend, but we knew it was there. So these are three different shitas regarding what Bnei Yisrael heard with the Aseres Hadibros. Yeah.
There's also Ra'u et
HaKol. That's correct.
So like what you said about the frequency, because...
That's right. There was a... there's even a technical... medical or psychological term for it when you kind of mix up senses. Apparently people can sometimes, when they hear music, they see certain colors and the like, and there was that experience of seeing the sounds and hearing the sights, and all of that was mixed in terms. Say again? Yeah.
How do you see
the sound? Well, most people don't, but there is a condition where certain sounds trigger certain visual colors. You know, again, I don't have that. You know, if we don't have it, we don't understand it. But it does. The phenomenon does exist. Now, another thing. You may recall again, unless you yourself know how to lane or have children who have lanes or whatever, you may not be totally familiar with this. But we know, of course, that in throughout Tanakh we have what are called tamim, trep. Right, the way you sing it, the way it's read, etc. Now, for the Aseres Hadibros, there is something unique here, because we actually have two separate sets of ta'amim. There is, if you open up a chumash and you look at Shmos Perek Chaf, you will see certain ta'amim, but paradoxically, those are not the ta'amim that are read in the Kriyas HaTorah in Shul. Rather, the standard ta'amim, which are never read, although Yerushalayim has a unique minhag, are called tam ha-tachton, the lower cantillation. And you'll see a note in every chumash that says, b'tzibur, we should read b'tam ho-elyon, with the upper cantillation, which is found in the back of the chumash. Right, so you turn to the back of the chumash, then you'll see the actual ta'amim that are read. Now, the difference between Tama Tachton and Tama Elyon is Tama Tachton is based on Psukim. In other words, like everything else. In other words, the Aseres and Nivros are divided into Psukim, and at the end of every Pasuk, there's a trap, Sof Pasuk, the end of a Pasuk. The Tama Elyon aggregates the verses based on the Dibor. So let me give you an example. Let's take Shabbos. Shabbos is the fourth commandment. Now, the Dibor of Shabbos actually comprises five Psukim. Remember the day of Shabbos to keep it holy is one Pasuk, etc. So, in the Tama Tachton, it'll be read as five different Psukim. In the Tam HaElyon, the trup is configured in such a way that instead of five short Psukim, you have one very long Pasuk. Because since it's all one commandment about Shabbos, it is extended. Now, the other way around. In the very short staccato commandments, lo tirtzach, right, don't murder, lo tinaf, don't commit adultery, lo signov, do not steal, and do not give false witness. That is actually one pasuk. One pasuk, but in the Tam HaElyon, each grouping is read as a separate pasuk. Lo tirtzach, right, one, right? So the concept basically is that the Tam HaElyon ignores the psukim division, and will either combine several psukim into one or separate one pasuk into several psukim depending on the nature of the commandments. Okay, and that's called Tam HaElyon. Why is it called the higher cantillation? Well, there are two reasons why it's called the higher cantillation. One reason is because it represents the higher level of how God gave it to us. In other words, it's an interesting thing. Although in the Torah the psukim are divided a certain way, but when God gave us the Ten Commandments, He articulated it in that way. The other is that it's simply a question of what the notes look like. In other words, some notes are above the word and some notes are below the word. In the Tam HaElyon, more of the notes are above the word, just the way it's done. Now, the question becomes, if the Tam HaElyon is what we read in Shul, so why do we have a Tam HaTachton at all? When is it ever used? And the short answer is that when a person reads the Torah b'yichidus, when you're reading it alone, and you read it with the tamim, you use the tam hatachton. The tam ho'elyon is used b'tzibor. But here's another question, and that is the minhag among most Ashkenazim and Sfardim is that, remember, we have the Aseres HaDibros twice in the Torah, and I'll talk about that too. We have it in Parshas Yisro, when it actually happens. And then we have it in Parshas V'yeshanan when Moshe is reviewing the history of the Jewish people. And there are some differences, and we'll talk about those differences. And in both cases, we read the Tam HaElyon B'tzibor and the Tam HaTachton B'yachid. Okay, that's fine. But here is the problem. The Minhag of Yerushalayim, and I shouldn't say universally, but when I say Yerushalayim, I refer to the Minhag of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and a lot of the Ashkenazic Minhagim of Yerushalayim, non-Hasidic, are based on the Vilna Gaon, is that the Tam HaElyon is only used on Shavuos, when we read Matan Torah. When you read Parshas Yisro during the year, you use the Tam HaTachton. So the big kasha on the Minhag of the Gra is, why is there a Tam HaElyon for Parshas V'yeshanan? When are you ever going to use it? See, Bishlama, like the Minhagim, not like the Gra, that every Kriya B'tzibor is going to have the Tam HaElyon. So when I read Yisro during the year, I use Tam HaElyon. And when I read V'yeshanan during the year, I use the Tam HaElyon. And the Tam HaTachton is only B'yechidus. But like the Minhag HaGra, that Tam HaElyon is only used for Shavuos itself. Now on Shavuos we don't read V'yeshanan. On Shavuos we only read Yisro. So it turns out, according to the Minhag HaGra, there is no utilization of the Tam HaElyon for Eschanan. So what is it for? It's a strong kasha on the Minhag of the Gra. Why is there a Tam HaElyon? Unless it was posited, hypothesized, that perhaps the halacha allowed you to either read V'yeshanan or Yisro on Shavuos. Our minhag is now Yisro, but there was such an alternative minhag of V'yeshanan on Shavuos, and for that reason there was a Tamo Elyon. But be aware, therefore, that if you're in some Kehilos in Yerushalayim and it's Parshat Yisro, you might actually hear the Tam HaTachdon read rather than the Tamo Elyon. But in the United States, that's virtually a non-existent custom. Every Kriyas HaTorah of the Aseres HaDibros will always be with the Tam HaElyon. Yeah. Yeah, well, the reason basically is because on Shavuos, we actually want to reenact the experience of Matan Torah. So we read the Kriya dealing with the experience. Now, I want to point out, too, and I'll get into this in more depth, but we do have these two versions of the Aseres HaDibros. And there are some differences between the two versions. The most famous difference is in the fourth commandment. The fourth commandment in Yisro is Zochor es Yom HaShabbos, remember the day of Shabbos to keep it holy. And in Parshas V'Yeschanan, it is Shomor, observe, and Zochor refers to the mitzvah of Kiddush and the positive aspects of Shabbos, and Shomor is the negative, not doing malacha. And which did Hashem say? So Chazal teach us they were said simultaneously. And this is why L'cha Dodi, the poem written by Rav Shlomo Alkabit, says, Shamor and Zachor b'dibor echad. They were said in one word. Now you might ask the question, although it's a simple answer, if Zachor is first in Shemos, so shouldn't it say Zachor v'Shamor b'dibor echad? But the answer is, the poem was written by Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, and each stanza begins with a letter of his name. His name was not Zalman, his name was Shlomo. And as a result, the first stanza had to be Shamor V'Zachar. So the requirements of poetic acrostic hold true, no matter what your madrega is, and therefore it's Shamor V'Zachar. Derech Agav, although I'm getting ahead of myself, the concept of Zachor and Shamor, B'dibor Echad, actually is not just an agada, but it actually has a very important halachic ramification that applies to women in particular. And that is, the Gemara says in Arve Psachim that although women are normally exempt from many positive commandments that are time-bound, mitzvat aseh shezman grama, like lulav, even shofar, women are exempt from, although the custom is they hear shofar. Technically, you are exempt from shofar, but there are a lot of exceptions. In fact, there may be more exceptions than rules. And one of the important exceptions is women are chayavos to either make kiddush on Shabbos or to hear kiddush, either one. A woman could make kiddush for her husband, even. And the question becomes, why is that so? Is not kiddush a mitzvah taseh shazman grama? And the answer is, since Shamor and Zachor were said by Hashem the same time, and Shamor is the negative, thou shalt not do malacha, and we know that women are equally bound with negatives to men, so we have a klal, anyone that has the negative of Shabbos also has the positive of Shabbos, because they're bound together. So this is a very important halacha. This is the halachic basis of women being chayeves in Kiddush, even though it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Of course, I don't want to scare you, I will mention a famous psak of the Nei Debi Yehuda, but then tell you we don't paskin like it, so don't be worried. That is, the Nei Debi Yehuda paskins the following rule, the great Rav of Prague, he paskins that since under Torah law, when a person davens marv, see, Kiddush on wine is rabbinic. Under Torah law, if I say Vayichulu in Shul, I'm Yotzei Kiddush. So the Nei Debi Yehuda says the following problem. Man davens Mariv Friday night in Shul. The man has fulfilled his Chiyuv of Kiddush min HaTorah. He is now downgraded to only a rabbinic obligation. If his wife has not davened Mariv Friday night, her obligation in Kiddush is a Torah obligation. So the Nei Debi Yehuda says, a man who is no longer chayav in the Kiddush min HaTorah cannot be motzi his wife who has a chiyav d'oraisa in Kiddush. And therefore, if a man davened Mariv and comes home, and his wife has not davened Mariv, she must make Kiddush herself. She cannot be Yotze with her husband. Now this is the Chumrah of the Night of Yehuda. Let me hasten to add right away, there are many, many reasons why we don't paskin that way. First of all, some have argued that the same way the man is Yotze Kiddush with Vayichulu, the woman is Yotze Kiddush with Lichbenchi. So they're both rabbinic, in other words, they're both on the same level of Kiddush on wine. Or, Rabbi Kivager says, if a woman says to her husband, Good Shabbos, hopefully they communicate on that level, at that point, she's also Yotze Kiddush on the Torah level, right? So there are a lot of different cheshbonos. So you don't have to tell your husband anything, everything is fine. But the Neid Yehuda did have such a chumrah that the man who davens Maariv could not say Kiddush for his wife who didn't daven Maariv. Yeah.
A woman who davens Maariv at home Friday night, she doesn't say
Vayichulu. Yeah, she does, because in the Amidah, in the Friday night Amidah,
in
there's Vayichulu.
The Amidah, you have it, but the paragraph afterwards, if they say
No, that's fine, that's for Shomra. Well, in Eretz Yisrael, the custom is not to say it anyway. Again, that's the minhag of the Gra. But when I said Vayichulu, I know what you mean. I'm sorry, you mean man? Yeah, she does not say that, that's correct. But no, you're correct. But when I said that the husband is Yotze with Vayichulu, I meant even in the Amidah he's Yotze with Vayichulu.
So she says the Amidah.
So she would be exactly the same. Yeah. Yeah, you are correct. That Vayichulu was only said with a minion. Yeah. That's correct. Havdalah is a bit more tricky. There we indeed say if the husband made Havdalah, his wife would have to make Havdalah herself. He could not be Motzir. Havdalah is a little more tricky than Kiddush in that way. Now, another point, again, a preliminary point. What is the relationship between the Aseres HaDibros in Yisrael and the Aseres HaDibros in V'Yeshanan? It's a little problematical. Many people assume, just intuitively, that the Luchos in Yisro are the first Luchos, which Moshe smashed, and the Aseres HaDibros in V'Yeshanan represent the second Luchos that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down after the Chet HaEgel. This is kind of the assumption, and there are Mefarshim that say that. I just want to point out as a question, I'm not going to answer it today, that contextually, that doesn't seem to be the case, because Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas V'Yeshanan is describing the Matan Torah of Parshas Yisro. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu, right before his death, is going over the history of the Jewish people, and he's explaining Matan Torah with kolos, ubrakim, thunder and lightning, and Hashem gave me these commandments. So l'chaire, it's difficult to say that he's talking about the second Luchos, because the second Luchos were given in a great, great tznius, right? Now the second Luchos, there was no thunder and lightning. Moshe Rabbeinu went up, and on Yom Kippur he came down, and there was no thunder and lightning and gilui shechina. So the pashtus is that he is reviewing the first Luchos, but for whatever reason, he introduces changes in that, but he's not referring to a separate Luchos. But so you have to think about that, because al pipshuto shel mikra, he is not referring to the Luchos Shnios in V'Yeshanan, he is referring to the Luchos Rishonos. Okay. So now, when we go back to the commandment, which we have the first Pasuk, which B'nai Yisrael heard, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God, Asher Hotzei Sicha Meyeretz Mitzrayim Mibeis Avodim, who took you out of the land of Egypt from the house of slavery. So you immediately hit a question. Is this a commandment or is this not a commandment? And if it is a because it doesn't seem to say, right, commandments are normally you shall do or you shall not do. This is a declaration. Is it a mitzvah or not? So, once again, we have a machlokes, the Rambam, Maimonides, and Ramban, Nachmanides. Maimonides says this is one of the positive mitzvahs of the Torah. And this is a mitzvah called Emuna in Hashem. There is an obligation to believe in one God, who took us out of Mitzrayim. The mitzvah of emunah. If one does not believe in God, one is in violation of this commandment. Now, this is what the Rambam says. Nachmanides, Ramban, argues that to make emunah a mitzvah is an illogical conclusion, impossibility. Because if you don't believe in God, what is the commandment that tells you to believe in God? Who's commanding you to believe in God? Let's assume a person's an atheist. So I tell the person, you are obligated to believe in God. And he says, yeah, who says? I says, God has commanded you. But there's no God. So Nachmanides says, Ramban argues, it is not possible that emunah itself can be a mitzvah. Emunah is the foundation, it is the predicate, it is the basis for every other mitzvah. But the one who's not a ma'amin is not in a position where he can be commanded. Now that's a pretty strong question. On the other hand, let me point out that Maimonides has a very strong Talmudic source, the Gemara that I referred to before, because remember, the Gemara says there are 613 mitzvahs, and even though Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe is only 611, two of the mitzvahs we heard from Hashem, and what are the two that are counted? Anochi and Lo Yelecha. It's a very good riot, it's a very good proof to the Rambam, Anochi is a mitzvah. Because Chazal say, those are the two that we didn't hear. We heard from Hashem, we didn't hear from Moshe. So apparently, what the Rambam is saying is the following. And with Noach Weinberg, that's how I address this in great depth. Apparently the concept is this. Rambam, Maimonides. The concept is this. Certainly the mitzvah of emunah cannot be addressed to an atheist. Because an atheist has no one to whom he believes he's being commanded. But God could certainly command the person who believes because of tradition to convince themselves of the existence of Hashem through rational thoughts and philosophical inquiry. In other words, according to the Shita of the Rambam, the mitzvah of emunah is not only to believe because of blind faith and tradition, but to intellectually convince yourself of the reality of Hashem's presence. So God is saying, you people who believe in me, convince yourself of the truth of my existence. Now this is indeed the shita of the Rambam throughout the Bora Nevuchim, that there is a mitzvah to philosophically investigate the proofs of Hashem's existence, and the Rambam was confident that if one would undertake that type of inquiry, one would become intellectually convinced of the reality of God. Now, you also know, I'm sure, that throughout Jewish history, this itself has been a very controversial position. The Mora Nevuchim itself, which attempts to utilize Aristotelian philosophy to prove the existence of Hashem, was banned by many Gedolim at various points. It was even burnt. Although we have a tradition that around 50 years after the Rambam's books were burnt, the Catholic Church burnt 24 wagon loads of Gemaras in Paris. And the Gedolim at the time says that was an onesh min hashamayim for burning the Rambam's books. But the Rambam's books were burnt. Even the Chovas HaLevavos, which is one of the most beloved, greatest Musar Sfarim that we have, Duties of the Heart, Chovas HaLevavos. So you may know that the first chapter of Chovas HaLevavos is called Shar HaYichud, that deals with the unity of God, and it's a philosophical attempt to prove the existence of God. And even people like the Vilna Gaon said, everything in the Chovas HaLevavos is wonderful and holy, but start with chapter 2. Do not read Shar HaYichud. In fact, there's a very beautiful Hebrew translation, modern Hebrew translation. Chovas HaLevavos was written in Arabic and was translated into Hebrew by the Ibn Tibbon family, who did all the Rambam translations, but there was a more modern translation called Lev Tov. It's really it's the Chovas HaLevavos to get, so to speak. But he does not translate the Shar HaYichud. Instead, he has like a 100-page introduction with all the reasons why you shouldn't read the Shara Yichud. And in the yeshiva today, rest assured, well, maybe there are some exceptions, but you can count them on half of one hand. Mora Nevuchim is not learnt in a standard yeshiva curriculum, and it would actually be actively discouraged. So I'm not here to be machriya on these questions. I just want to point out that what the Rambam regards as the mitzvah of Emunah, there are many who will say it's forbidden to even trod on that path because of the fear. Now the fear is, because of the fear that when you open the Pandora's box of raising questions, then chas v'shalom, you never know where you're going to come out. So what do? You take a person who has faith in Hashem, because that's what he was taught, and he says, let's reopen this and let's try to prove there's a God intellectually. Well, once you start down a certain path, you're not entirely sure where somebody will come out. So the shita would be, better not to start. On the other hand, that also means the emunah is not complete. Now, in the Hasidic movement, there was an alternative. Rav Nachman of Breslov, for example, was bichlal very much against philosophical notions of emunah, because he said emunah should be based totally on kind of the blind faith. So we have these different models, and I just want to point out that the Rambam does have a unique understanding of the mitzvah of emunah that is not shared by many Rishonim. Okay. Now, going further in the Pasuk says, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt from the house of slavery. First of all, it's important to note that throughout this Pasuk and the next Pasuk as well, it is written Bolashon Yachid. Bolashon Yachid. It is not written in terms of plural, but rather each individual person must acknowledge his dependence on Hashem, his Hakaras HaTov, the idea that I myself was liberated from Mitzrayim, as we talked about before Pesach, that you're not simply part of a Jewish nation, but we have a unique, individual, singular relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Mefarshim asked the question, why does it mention I am the Hashem who took you out of Egypt? If Hashem is trying to say, I'm powerful, I do great things, he should have had the ultimate great thing, I am the Hashem that created heaven and earth. So the Ramban brings a number of different terutzim. Yeah. Okay, embodied in what? I'm sorry.
That he created the heaven and
earth. Would be embodied in which commandment?
The
Anochi itself. Well, it's not that explicit, I would say. You know, I mean, it's not as explicit. I mean, so let me just say what the Ramban says. So the Ramban brings a few answers. One answer is, if Hashem is establishing his unique relationship with Am Yisrael, he wants to bring out an event that is unique to us, as opposed to something that would be shared by all the nations of the world. So, right, if Hashem is giving the Torah to the Goyim, he'll say, I created heaven and earth. But if he's have a unique covenant with Am Yisrael, then he picks Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's one answer. Yeah?
Couldn't you say that there were witnesses to Yetzias?
Right, so that's answer number two. Now, answer number two is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring out an experience that was known firsthand by that generation. These were people who left Mitzrayim. He says, remember! Yeah? Well, that's very, very true. And then, you know, then we have to get into a much longer discussion. That was a purification process. That was a process we needed to go through. The Torah later describes it as the iron furnace, Kor HaBarzel, just as the fire of the furnace burns out the impurities and the dross. I mean, that's a good question. But nevertheless, Hashem is basically saying, you know what I've done for you. Personally, on a personal level. But the Ramban gives a third answer, which is a very beautiful and important answer. He says, you know, there were philosophers in the world who believed that Hashem created the world, But once he creates the world operates on automatic pilot. God is not directly involved in the day-to-day running of the world. After all, one might even say, if you consider this world as a speck in a universe approaching infinity, in which there are millions and millions of planets and stars, and the size of the universe is beyond comprehension, and it's expanding like an expanding universe, whatever it is, why on earth, no pun intended, why on earth would HaKadosh Baruch Hu care about this trivial little speck, and on this trivial little speck, care about a small, minuscule group of people who are less than an atom, less than an atom in this universe? And therefore, there were those who were willing to believe that there was the God of nature who created the world, but they were not willing to believe there was a God that loved humanity or loved Bnei Yisrael, that cared about them, that was actively involved in their lives. So Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the Ramban writes, is establishing not only the Hashem who created the world, but the Hashem who continues to intervene in the world, to take care of his people, to punish those who do evil, to reward those who do good. And ultimately, that's needed to understand the Torah, because otherwise you might say, well, how could Hashem possibly care if I do this or do that? What's the difference? And the answer is Yetzias Mitzrayim shows us not only the Hashem of Bria, but also the HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Hashkacha. Hashkacha is divine supervision, divine intervention. The notion that God cares about what we do, God cares about who we are, we make a difference to the Ribono Shel Olam. That's so fundamental. We make a difference. We have a chashivas in the eyes of Hashem. And that is why he brings in Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Ramban says, and not just the idea of Briyas HaOlam. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So again, like the Rambam, it is actually a mitzvah called Emunah. Like the Ramban, it is not a mitzvah, but it is the foundation of everything. Without a belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where are you going to be? Now this raises an interesting, very interesting question, which has halachic repercussions. And that is, if a person does not have Emunah, but he does things that are mitzvahs. He gives charity. He doesn't speak Lashon Hara. He honors his parents. Right? You can have good atheists too. The question is, does he get reward in Shemayim for the mitzvahs that he's done if he does not do them because he believes in Hashem who gave these commandments? It's a difficult question. On one hand, we have a principle that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never withholds reward for anything good that a person does. On the other hand, they say in the name of Rav Chaim, Rav Chaim says that one who does not believe in Hashem cannot get reward for doing a mitzvah because, as far as he's concerned, he's not doing a mitzvah. The word mitzvah means a commandment. A commandment presupposes that there was a God who commanded. So again, all of these theoretical questions, you know, it's up to Hashem, ultimately. We don't really know. I think there are riots. I mean, there are riots in Chazal that idol worshippers who did good things. You're learning Rus before here. If you remember Eglon Melech Moav, right? Eglon Melech Moav, when Ehud Ben Gera comes to Eglon and says, I have a message from Hashem. Mm-hmm. So Eglon, who was a very heavy guy, takes three steps forward and gets stuck in the belly and he dies, but Chazal say because of the three steps that may have been very hard for him, the three steps that Eglon Melech Moav took, he was zoche to have Rus, from whom David HaMelech came. Now he was an idol worshiper. However, that's not the same as an atheist, because after all, he did believe in Hashem, although he may have believed in other kohos, and in fact he stood up in honor of Hashem. So that's not the same as the person who doesn't believe in Hashem. So you can't automatically bring a proof from that. Yeah. Yes, but the Rambam says, yeah, but the Rambam says specifically about the pious of the nations of the world that have a share in the Umat in Olam Haba.
Is it only Rambam? The quote is from the Rambam. Yeah, the Rambam says it. The Rambam says it. But the Rambam himself qualifies it specifically. The Rambam says specifically, only if they believe that Hashem gave this commandment and they're doing it because Hashem commanded it. So the Rambam himself says that explicitly. So it's a difficult question. It's a difficult question. But as I say, there is a machloket. Can it not be chorus get reward for the mitzvahs that they do when they're not doing it because of a mitzvah? Some say when it comes to mitzvahs bein adam l'mat l'chaveiro, interpersonal mitzvahs, the main thing is the good that you accomplish. In other words, obviously, if an apikoros happened to keep Shabbos because he took a nap, you know, he's not going to get reward because he didn't turn on the light on Shabbos, because that had nothing to do with a religious thing. On the other hand, some say in interpersonal commandments, the good is objectively good, and if the good is objectively good, there'll be some reward. Okay, so Anochi is either first commandment or foundation. That's machlokas. Okay, we then move. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Is there a difference between an apikoros and an atheist?
Yes, I was not using the terms exactly. Well, it depends. Apikoros.
I'm derailing your
that's fine. Apikoros is we normally translate. Love dafka. Love. I mean, it depends. Apikoros can be used in loose ways and in tight ways. The technical definition of an apikoros would correspond either to an atheist, or even if someone believes in Hashem, but he does not believe the Torah came from Shamayim. Now, the term atheist itself does not have to connote an active fighter. I'm sorry, the term apikoros does not have to connote an active fighter against the Torah. We sometimes use it in a looser, more broader sense, but its technical sense does not have to connect. On the other hand, the Gemara actually says that sometimes people can be called apikorsim even if they're from people. According to one view in the Gemara, a person who publicly humiliates a Talmid Chacham has the status of an apikoros, even if he's from and learned and everything else. So those are non-core meanings of apikoros, but the term gets expanded. Of course, sometimes, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, it gets expanded to unreasonable proportions. You know, somebody has a psak that someone else doesn't like, so we call it an apikoros, but that's not correct. You have to be very careful about these terms. The Maral would actually put people in cherem when he was the Rav of Prague, when they would misuse these epithets against other people, and he actually, you know, there were sanctions. People were punished severely for using derogatory terms like this. But today we tend to be less conscientious, unfortunately. Okay.
Well, that's true also.
Of course, let me tell you a short story about an apikoros. I think I may have mentioned it before. There was a fellow in Minsk, a yeshiva boy, who decided he didn't believe anymore, so he wanted to become an apikoros. So he was told he had to go to Yassel in Minsk, who was the chief apikoros. So he's looking in the bars and the libraries and the universities. He's looking for where this Yassel's hanging around. So finally, he gets directed to a Beis HaMedrash. He's a little, why is the apikoros in the Beis HaMedrash? And he's looking around for a modern guy who's smoking or something. And finally, there's an old man with a long white beard wearing tefillin and a talis over his head, seated over a big gemara. This is Yassel of the apikoros. So he goes to Yassel of the apikoros and says, you know, I don't believe in this anymore. I want to be an apikoros. And I'm told, you're the one that leads the apikorsim. So Yassel looks at him and says, have you finished the Talmud? He says, well, no, I don't. He says, do you know Chumash and Rashi well? He says, no. He says, you're no apikoros, you're just ignorant. You know, there is a concept that to be a real apikoros, you have to kind of know what it is that you are rejecting, and then you reject it on Rachmana Litzlan. But unfortunately, many of the atheists or the apikorsim today never had the chinuch. Now, does that mean they're not an apikoros? Rav Chaim says, no, Rav Chaim used to say, an apikoros is nebuch an apikoros, meaning even if you're born in Africa, I mean, this again, he's very tough on this. He says, definitionally, if you don't believe in God, you're stuck.
maybe there's Gilgal, maybe there's reincarnation that will help you.
No,
but he says there's no, he says, in Apikorsis, Rav Chaim used to say, there's no concept of Tinok Shnishma, because the admission ticket for Olam Haba is Emuna. Without Emuna, you're stuck. Others understand that differently. In other words, Rav Chaim's concept is, lack of Emuna is not simply a sin. If it would be a sin, you would have excuses, you'd have mitigation. But rather, lack of Emuna means you don't have the basic connection. But as I say, that's a big machlokas, and about that. So some look at it differently, and as I say, the Kabbalistic idea of reincarnation would ensure that even the kids who are born in Africa or Tinuk Shanishba will always be given chances to achieve Emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, all right, so that's our very brief discussion of the either the first commandment or the foundation commandment. I just want to spend a few minutes of Lag BaOmer, since it's the holiday of Lag BaOmer. I don't know if any of you are doing bonfires today or the like. Oh, tonight? That's okay. Well, I know the Rabbanut wanted, you know, the same way they did with Yom HaSmuts, to push it off a day because of Chilul Shabbos, they wanted to do it with Lag BaOmer, but the Hasidim say, we don't start fires on Shabbos anyway, so we're not pushing anything off. And the truth is, it's harder to push, you know, Yom HaSmuts was created by the Rabbanut, so they could, you know, they could decree when you do it. Lag BaOmer is kind of fixed. You're not really allowed to manipulate Lag BaOmer in the same way. But you know, I don't know if you've ever been to Meiron. I remember I have always said everyone should go to Meiron once in their life, but not necessarily more than once. But it's something to see, hundreds of thousands of people. And then we have the local Rav Shimon Atzadik's kever in my neighborhood, which is an a low cost alternative to Meiron and the like. But I there are two reasons why Lag BaOmer is a joyous occasion. Not this year. I did go last year, but this year I'm a little jet lagged. One reason is that we know that the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died throughout this period, and on Lag BaOmer the Magefa stopped. And whether it stopped only for one day or whether it stopped permanently, that depends on the customs. But there was a cessation of an awesome plague on Lag BaOmer. And the second reason why it's a simcha, which is connected to Meiron, is that this was the anniversary of the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva, one of the surviving students. But the tradition has it that he died on Lag BaOmer. So why would it become a joyous occasion? Because it is said, on the day that he died, he revealed the mystical secrets of the Zohar to Am Yisrael. And it was a day of great Kedusha, of great Aliyah, and therefore we commemorate his memory by going to his kever, by reciting the songs, Bar Yochai and the like, because he brought down the secrets of holiness to the world. Now, what I want to suggest to you is that these two themes, on some level, operate in contradiction and operate in tension. When we ask ourselves, what type of person was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Now, he was a person certainly beyond our comprehension, but Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai represented the highest epitome of total devotion to Hashem and total devekus to the Shechina. Ad kedei kach, that he was even opposed to the idea of people having a parnasa. There's a machlokas in Maseches Brachos. It says in Kriya Shema that if you keep the mitzvos of Hashem, the asafta diganecha, you will gather your grain. So Rabbi Yishmael says, we learn from here a chiddush. You're allowed to have a parnasa. That the concept is you get a job, you work, and Hashem will give you the bracha of parnasa, which sounds reasonable to us. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, Parnasa? What are you talking about? A person is going to plant when it's time to plant, and plow when it's time to plow, and harvest when it's time to harvest. How will he learn Torah? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, you serve Hashem, you learn Torah, you do mitzvahs, and Hashem will give you your parnasa. Don't even think about it. And he knows of what he speaks. Because for 12 years, He was in a cave, fleeing from the Romans. And the birds brought him meat. And trees grew up next to him, giving him fruits. And there were streams of water that came by. He said, it worked for me. It could work for anybody. Now, the Gemara says, many people followed the Hanhaga of Rabbi Yishmael to combine Parnassa with their Torah learning, and Hashem blessed them. And many people tried to follow the Midah of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and they starved, didn't work. Which indicates from the Gemara itself that the Midah of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not for everybody. That the Midah that Hashem, again, the relevance to issues of Kollel, I'll leave for another time. But the Midah of Rabbi Yishmael is the normative Midah. But the Vilna Gaon does have a diuk. The Vilna Gaon is medayuk this way. When the Gemara says many did like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, they were not successful, the Gemara does not simply say the negative, do not do like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It says many. For the many, for the average, for the masses, one should not follow the Midah of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But in every generation, there are Yechidei Segula. There are unique individuals. And by the way, I want to point out, unique individuals, when I say unique individuals, I don't mean so much unique in their brains. The uniqueness that I believe is being discussed here is uniqueness in their emuna in Hashem. That their emuna is so deep. See, emuna is a catch-22. This is the funny thing about emuna. The Chavis HaLevavos points out, the more emuna you have in Hashem's Hashkacha Pratis, the more Hashkacha Pratis you have. The less emuna, the less you'll get, which creates a vicious circle, right? Because the person believes Hashem's not really looking out for me, so Hashem looks out less for you. That's exactly what happened. So, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was, and I say this in a positive, reverential sense, a fanatic in the sense, again, in a positive sense, he was so devoted to Hashem, he could not see how a human being could waste a second. And because of that, Hashem gave him everything he needed. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the extreme of not understanding Olam Hazah, not understanding Havlei Olam Hazah, not understanding. I mean, to him, to not learn for a minute was a tragedy. This was the Madrega he was on. Now, so when we think about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we think about this total devotion, total connection, total devekus. Ad kidei kach, I just want to mention that when he went out after 12 years and he saw a farmer plowing and he couldn't understand it and he looked at the farmer and the farmer burnt up and Hashem told him, go back into the cave for another year. You weren't ready for this world. Did you want to say something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although he was with his son, let me remind you. Yeah.
Well, then his son was subjected to the same self-imprisonment that he was. This is not a good person. He was not doing so many mitzvot.
You know, again, it's hard for us. Again, the one thing the Gemara does tell us is this was not the path that should generally be followed. That much we can take from the Gemara. However, exceptional individuals have different paths, just as Moshe Rabbeinu was celibate. And that's not a path that we follow, but we understand the unbridgeable greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. So to a lesser degree, we have the same thing here. But let me just point out the other point side of the equation. Now, so this is the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai idea. And by the way, the notion of Shemitah is connected to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai because the concept is once every 7 years, the Jewish farmer should live like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, meaning to kind of separate himself just to have that experience. Even Shabbos every week, in a sense, ideally is, let us live the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai existence
of removing ourselves from Olam Hazeh. Now, we then come to the fact that the students of Rabbi Akiva didn't die. Now, we know that why did they die for the first part of the Omer? Because they did not show proper kavod to each other. Now, kavod, Rav Hirsch says, honor, respect, dignity, is connected to the word kaved, or kavedut, which is heaviness. And this is a very important idea. Rav Hirsch points out, kavod is not a matter of etiquette or politeness. It's a matter of seeing the significance in the other person. You see, you can be very polite to a person, but you consider them a lightweight or a nobody. Kavod is an attitudinal thing, where you see something within the person that is special, that is good, that is unique. You relate to people with an internal respect for their dignity and where they're coming from. Right? Even, you know, even in Kirov, the concept is not in Kirov Rechokim to look at a non-religious Jew and kind of say, well, they're a nobody and I will fill them up with my wisdom and my insight and my knowledge and my goodness. Because first of all, people sense that and they resent that. Rather, the concept is to see the chashivas that's already there, to see the goodness that's there. Right? What is the role of a parent? What is the role of a spouse? What is the role of a teacher? Is to try to connect to that within a person that is good, and to communicate that, and to see it, and to look for it. And what happens is perceptions become realities. As we strive to see the good in someone, that good will become manifest and real. So it's brought down in all the Svarim that our avoda in Sfiras HaOmer is not just to mourn over the students of Rabbi Akiva, but to try to correct in our own lives that flaw. Now, here is why I want to suggest the two ideas of Lag BaOmer are in a bit of a tension. And maybe we see this in our society, in Yerushalayim even. Sometimes, as a person gets more passionate and more fiery about their relationship with Hashem, they tend to increase their sense of disdain or denigration for others who don't have the same passion. The person like who believes in learning is the only important thing might look at the working person with kind of a failure in life, second rate, not significant. Now, the other way around, sometimes you see in the world people who are what you call big tent Jews, Avas Yisrael, they love everybody. But it turns into, I'm okay, you're okay. You know, it's okay, let's have a gay minion, let's have whatever it would be. In other words, people who say everything is okay stand for nothing. If everything is legitimate, then nothing has true value. So you're going to find that sometimes the more we try to see the kavod in everybody, the less passionate we come about our Yiddishkeit. The more passionate we become about our Yiddishkeit, the less kavod we see in the other. Lag BaOmer is telling you, you gotta do two things at the same time. On one hand, we think about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we think about devotion, we think about passion, we think about commitment. We think about the vital importance of serving Hashem with every ounce of our strength. But in remembering the students of Rabbi Akiva, who stopped dying on this day, we remember the importance of seeing the good in others, of looking at them with respect, seeing their dignity even when they're not following our path. And even though in the real world of imperfection, these two characteristics often are in contradiction, and as you increase one, you diminish the other. Lag BaOmer says, can't do that. You got to carry both weights at the same time, and you have to balance them. And the truth of the matter is, well, many Gedolim exemplified this idea. I remember of Moshe Feinstein, we just celebrated or commemorated his 25th Yahrzeit, was a person of unbelievable Torah knowledge and unbelievable dedication, a person who did not waste a minute, a person who, when he would be walking, would be saying Mishnayos under his breath. And yet, I remember as a child, he used to come to Connecticut when I was growing up,
the Derech Eretz he had for, you know, every single, not even every single Jew, every single person. Every person he walked by in the street, he would say, good morning, hello, goy, Jew, man, woman, you know, all of these things. A person who had such covet, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was that way as well. And you'll often see that the greater the person in Torah, ultimately, the greater the covet they have for everyone they meet, even those who don't keep the Torah in such a faithful way. And it is only when we reach lower levels in which one thing cancels out the other. But ideally, it shouldn't be. Ideally, it should all build and strengthen. So this is what we can think about on Lag BaOmer and Be'ezras Hashem. If we can work in that, then Lag BaOmer will be a great precursor to Matan Torah. Remember, the Jews could not receive the Torah until we were Ish Echad Uvelev Echad, one person, one heart. So working on this idea of Kavod Zeh Lo Zeh is not just, it's not just an accident that it happened during this period. Rather, it happened during this period to remind us that this is an essential element in how we prepare to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. So have a good day.
What you mentioned at the bonfires, why?
Yeah, the bonfires are very, very difficult. The idea of the bonfires is that the mysteries of the Torah are compared to fire. So since this was the day that the mysteries were revealed, so we have the fire. But it's a week.